There is a Mishnah on the end of Maseches Makos, which has become very, very familiar to all of us. Rabbi Hanani ben Akasha Omer Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lezakos Es Yisrael Lefika Chirba Lehem Torah Mitzvahs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us many, many different mitzvah opportunities throughout the year. And the question that becomes, and particularly in the season of Yamim Tovim, is how are we supposed to honor and respect those opportunities? And the question that later comes is, after we're finished with observing that mitzvah, what are we supposed to do? So I got the question this week, probably 100 times. What are we supposed to do with the menorah? I don't want to save it. I'm not going to use it next year. We got a new menorah. It's a disposable menorah. Am I actually allowed to throw it out? What about all of the wicks? What about the oils? And this is something which is not really limited to Hanukkah. It's something that really has a much larger reach to many other mitzvahs that we observe throughout the year. Now, the truth is, while one is observing the mitzvah, the Ramah already introduces us in Yerodeus and in Reish Pei Aleph to the idea, to the concept of every time you pass by the mezuzah, we should kiss the mezuzah. Where does that come from? What is it all about? So this is actually an interesting discussion in the Achronim there to try to figure out where did the Ramah come up with this idea and why should that be the case? So some say it really comes from the idea that the Gemara tells us by Unkelus and Maseches Avodah Zarah that we're told it was a whole story where he was being taken away by the authorities, and he stopped at the mezuzah, and that impressed all the soldiers, and they stopped with their plan. A whole story there. But Rabbi Akiva Eiger questions, what does that have to do with us? That has no connection at all to our reality today. What happened to Unkelus happened to him. He saved his own life by doing something with the mezuzah. What does that have to do with us? So some say the reason why the Ramah says that we should kiss the mezuzah is because we're supposed to show chavivus hamitzvah. And this is a mitzvah that we observe all the time, and therefore we have the opportunity to show that chavivus by kissing it. It's interesting, now that we're talking about mezuzah, it's just reminded, I was at a wedding a number of years ago, and I was very involved in this couple before they got married, and they had absolutely no plan of keeping Taras HaMishpacha. This girl came from a family that was not at all observant. Her father is not Jewish at all. So it was a major question exactly what the religious standards of that family was going to be. And they had asked me to take some kind of official role at the wedding and to potentially think about being Mesada Kedushin. So I wasn't sure exactly how can I be Mesada Kedushin when I know that they're not going to be keeping Taras HaMishpacha later on. So I got in a whole discussion with my father about it, whether I should or I shouldn't. An interesting question. But at some point, my father mentioned to me along the conversation, he said, you know, it would be a good idea. You should get them a wedding present. You know, if you're friendly with them and they respect you, then you should get them a wedding present. I said, what am I supposed to get them? He said, why not buy mezuzahs? This way, they'll have the opportunity to observe the mitzvah all the time. And it's something maybe they would not have bought on their own. He said, it's worth investing if you know someone's going to actually do the mitzvah. If you think they're going to throw it out, then don't waste your money. But if you think they're actually going to hang it up. So he said, that's win-win. That's an amazing opportunity to give someone a mezuzah that they otherwise will not use. Is a tremendous chus, and he said that perhaps at some point it will rub off on them and be able to remind them of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is supposed to be in someone's home, and maybe it will inspire them to be able to observe mitzvahs later on. I thought that was an interesting idea, but that really it has nothing at all to do with the Ramah, but the Ramah here says that we should think about the mezuzah as we pass by, and we should give a kiss to the mezuzah. The Mishnah Berurah writes, Re'isi mimenei aliyah shahei menashkin hamatzos v'hamarar. Says the Mishnah Berurah, there were those who every time they came to Leil HaSeder, they would pick up the matzah and the marah, not just get ready to eat it at the Leil HaSeder, but they would kiss the matzah and the marah to show a tremendous chavivus hamitzvah. This is the Mishnah Berurah quoting from the Shalah HaKadosh. And he says that by the sukkah as well, there was some kind of minog that people would go around kissing the panels, the defanos of the sukkah. It's something interesting that I saw a number of years ago from the Aderes. In one of his svarim, the Aderes wrote extensively about lots of different things. So in one of his svarim, the Aderes writes, Be'ein Roim, he said, when nobody was looking, I made sure, Ha'isi Menashek Atze HaSukkah B'Yom Shmini Atzeres. He said, I walked around my panels of the sukkah, and I made sure nobody was watching me, but I made sure to kiss all of the panels of the sukkah, Lo Tetur Ba'omer Udvarim Atzvos Libi. He said, I cannot describe the sadness, the pain that I had, when I thought about the reality that this is the last time I have the opportunity to observe this mitzvah for another year. And he said, especially when it was a leap year and I had to wait an extra month to be able to do the mitzvah of sukkah. So he said, I always made sure to show the chavivus hamitzvah before dismantling my sukkah because this was something that was very, very important and very cherished in his life. So the question then becomes, that is while we're observing the mitzvah. We're supposed to show a certain sense of chavivus hamitzvah, Beyond that, we know there's also a halacha that one is not allowed to be mevazeh as hamitzvah. The Gemara says that we learn from the mitzvah of kiseh hadam. How do we observe the mitzvah of kiseh hadam? So you slaughter an animal, then you have to cover over the blood. Only certain kinds of animals, not everyone. So you have to cover over the blood. That's a mitzvah normally when I'm dealing with dirt, so I'll kick it with my feet. What else am I going to do? So the Gemara says, no, lo yichasena baragla. When I'm doing the mitzvah of kiseh adam, it's not respectful to kick the dirt with my feet, even though the use of the dirt is being used for a mitzvah, and it's on the ground. But still, the Gemara says it's not respectful. You have to be mindful of bizui ha-mitzvah while the mitzvah is still in effect. But then the question becomes, every year, Rabbi, what do I do with my lulav? Usually it's the women of the house that are asking. What do I do with all the lulavim and asrogim, and they're all over the place, and hadassim and the arabas and the old pair of tzitzis and the panels of the sukkah and the old menorah and the leftover oils from Hanukkah. So what are we supposed to do? So let's see, what are the parameters, what are the guidelines, and let's try to understand it. So we have a concept, the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos Lamatesa Medbeis, a very interesting sugya there, where the Gemara tells a story about Rab Ami Verab Asi, two of the great Amoraim, ki have misramelu rifta de eruva. When they used to have the bread that was set aside for the eruv, mevarchan alav hamotzi lechem in haaretz. They would specifically go out of their way to use that for the hamotzi on Shabbos. Why? Says the Gemara, Amru, they said to each other, hov is aved be mitzvah chada, neved ba achrita. Since we already use these breads for the eruv, we may as well do another mitzvah with them and use them for the Lechem Mishnah on Shabbos. Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz, great idea. This is quoted not only in the Gemara there, Maseches Brachos, but also in Shulchan Aruch HaRachayim Siman Shin Tzadi Dalid, where the Gemara tells us that if you have the bread from the Eruv, you should then try to use it again. Once you no longer need it for the Eruv, you should now use it for other purposes of mitzvah, which is for the Lechem Mishnah. The Mishnah Berurah writes in Hilchos Habdalah that there were many who had a practice that they would take the Hadassim after Sukkos, and they would use them for the besamim every Matzai Shabbos. It wasn't just to save money, but it was done in order that we should show, hol this aved be mitzvah chada, neved be achrita. Once we already did one mitzvah, then we should then go ahead and do another one. So one of the achronim says, and what do you do after they no longer smell good? Doesn't last forever, the hadassim. So he says there was a further minhag that they would then take the hadassim after they dried up and throw it into the oven for Shabbos as they were cooking for Shabbos. Once again, this idea, this concept, that hol this aved be mitzvah chada, neved be achrita. Now we turn to Gemara Maseches Shabbos, where we're introduced to this idea of bizui ha-mitzvah. As I said before, the Gemara there talks about kisui hadam, that you have to make sure that when you are involved and were engaged in a mitzvah, that you treat that mitzvah respectfully and you are not mevazet. And it is for this reason that the Shulchan Aruch says, if somebody has a tzitzis, or if somebody is wearing a talis, they have to make sure that the strings are not going to drag on the floor, because that would certainly be a bizui ha-mitzvah. This is why some achronim ask that when it comes to the Gemara Maseches Gittin, the Gemara tells a story about one of the great Amoraim who had some kind of connection with all the authorities at the time, and it said that his name was Ben Tzitzis HaKesses. Why was it such a strange name? You think at his bris, his parents called him Ben Tzitzis HaKesses? Of course not. So why was he referred colloquially as Ben Tzitzis HaKesses? And the answer the Gemara gives is because Shahayat Tzitziso Negregas Ala Ritzba Ben Kasto Shalromi, because he used to walk among all the halls of Congress, and his tzitzis would drag on the floor. With all these fancy robes, his tzitzis would drag on the floor. So the Achronim asked, what do you mean his tzitzis drag on the floor? How are you allowed to have tzitzis dragging on the floor? So that's something they deal with over there, but it really stems from the fact that generally we would say that that is a bizayon mitzvah. For a person to not treat the mitzvah item respectfully as it's being used is something that is very, very problematic. And based on this, I saw an amazing comment of the Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi can be found in Parshas Truma. And the reason it's there is because the Torah there describes the mitzvah of v'yikhu li truma, that we have an obligation to contribute, to give of our money, to give of our resources for the sake of building a mishkan. And from there, the Beis Halevi gets into a discussion in a Sefer on Chumash about the idea of giving tzedakah in general. And he has a bunch of different items that he discusses when it comes to the mitzvah of tzedakah. So he writes the following. Hinei be'eish shenosnim hatzedakah la'ani. When you have an ani, it just changes the perspective. Sometimes somebody knocks at your door, somebody rings the bell, and you're really not interested, and you're exhausted, and you just had a long day, and you don't want to take them. Says the Beis Halevi, think about it from this perspective. Hinei be'eish shenosnim tzedakah la'ani. When I give tzedakah to a poor person who comes, v'nimtza mekayim beha'ani mitzvah satzedakah, and I have the opportunity to then be mekayim the mitzvah of tzedakah, az ha'ani hu mamish kamo b'chinas esrog. Why is the ani at that moment any less than an esrog? So you have an esrog box and you put it in a silver box and you cover it up and you make sure it doesn't get bent and you make sure it doesn't get hurt and you look after it. And you know that bizayin ha-mitzvah is something you're not allowed to do. So says the Beis HaLevi, when you're dealing with a person, certainly ben adam l'chaver, but when that person is facilitating your opportunity to be able to be mekayim ha-mitzvah, how could a person do anything less than treat that ani with the utmost respect? Now, don't mistakenly think that that means that I should therefore treat him like an esrog. So I remember reading a story, I think it's in the Hakdama, to the Tshuvas of the Maharsham. The Maharsham was one of the great Gedolim, about 100 years ago. So the Maharsham has a story that he says he once went to a big Yerid, he went to a big open fair, an open market, and he comes there and he says, on the other side of the gathering, so there was a midget, and it wasn't like today where we have movies and where we have the internet and we can see things that we otherwise wouldn't be exposed to in our own lives. I once said this and I said midget. Apparently, it's not the right way to say it now. You're supposed to say little people. I don't know. To me, I think little people is very degrading. I don't know, but that's the way they're called today. So he comes to this Yerid and he sees a little person on the other side of the room and he notices as a Jew is so excited that he has the opportunity to make the bracha Mishana Abrios. He never saw someone like this in his life. So you're supposed to make a special bracha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he made everybody look differently. You make a bracha Mishana Abrios. So what does he do? He says, he runs through, makes a beeline straight through the whole crowd, pushes everyone aside, goes over to this little person, picks him up on his shoulders, and he shakes him. Tafas osonanas kalulav. He said he shakes him like a lulav as he's shuckling to say his bracha. And the Maharsham writes, I watched all of this, and I said to myself, when a person was given the opportunity to pave for himself a path into Gan Eden by making this special bracha that you don't often have the opportunity to say, I watched him make a shvil shel zahav legehenim. I watched him pay for himself a golden path straight into Gehenna, because you embarrass someone in the process. So while it's true that we have to look at an ani as an opportunity to be mekayim a mitzvah and to treat that person properly, don't take it to the extreme and treat them like an item of a mitzvah. Understand there's a difference between your lulav and esrog and when you're dealing with a person who gives you the opportunity to do a mitzvah. The question that is asked is, why is there a problem of bizayin ha-mitzvah? What exactly is the issue? After all, it doesn't really have feelings. When I'm dealing with a person, so then I understand it. When I'm dealing with my esrog, what's the big deal? So interestingly, the Rambam actually talks about it in Hilchos Shechita, which makes sense because it's by Kisei Adam. That's where the Gemara has this discussion. So the Rambam says, when I do the mitzvah of Kisei Adam, I shouldn't kick the dirt with my feet. I should use my hands. She'ein ha-kavod la'atzman shel mitzvos. This is not because the dirt is so important. It's not because the esrog is so important or the lulav. It has no inherent significance. Rather, he says, Ela lemi shetziva bahem baruch hu, because these are representatives of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. If the Ribbono shel Olam told me to take an esrog, that means to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is important. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me I should eat matzah, if he said I should sit in a sukkah, it means that those items are important in the eyes of the Ribbono shel Olam. The Magen Mishnah there writes on the side, Shelo yehi mitzvos bezuyos alav, ki kavod ha-mitzvos kavod Hashem yizbarach. If I display kavod to the mitzvah itself, it's as if I'm displaying kavod to the Ribbono shel Olam himself, and explains the Magen Mishnah, Shehem shluchav shel makom, v'kavod ha-nishlach hu kavod ha-sholeach. This is like the representation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So imagine, you have somebody who comes to you, a government official, obviously, the governor or him or herself is not going to come to your house, but they're going to send someone else to your house to drop off a gift. What are you going to do? You're going to slam the door in their face. So was I disrespectful to the governor? No, this is 10 steps below the governor or 100 steps below. But the answer is no, you were disrespectful to the governor. Why? Because they sent someone. And that shliach is standing in the place of the moshel, of the governor himself. And therefore we assume that if you're not going to be respectful to the shliach, it's as if you're being disrespectful to the mishaleach, to the one who sent this person. And therefore explains the Magen Mishnah, in trying to understand what this Rambam says, Magen Mishnah writes, the answer is that when you have the opportunity to do a mitzvah, that really is in some way a shaliach, it's in some way an embodiment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you treat the mitzvah with respect, it's as if you're affording respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. So now let's assume, you're not showing any disrespect to the mitzvah itself, but you simply have no use for the item anymore. So the Gemara told us before, if you can still use it for an item later, if you can use it for your for your hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz, then go ahead and do that. And if you can use it to bake your challis for Shabbos, and if you can use it for besamim, all great. Let's say I have the old menorah, and I have nothing to do with it anymore. What now? So I have to save it forever? That would seem to be an unreasonable expectation. So what am I supposed to do? So we turn to a Gemara Maseches Megillah, Daf Chavva, where the Gemara has very clear guidelines, but the problem is it seems a little bit arbitrary when you think about it. The Gemara doesn't explain to us what is the difference between list A and list B. So the Gemara says as follows, Tana Rabbanan, Tashmishe Mitzvah Nizrakin, Tashmishe Kedusha Nignazin. The Gemara says there are two different categories of mitzvah items. Some are referred to as Tashmishe Kedusha, and others are referred to as Tashmishe Mitzvah. Tashmishe Kedusha, category A, are ones that even after you're finished with them, that's category A's Tashmishe Mitzvah, they are Nizrakin. You can dispose of them. You don't have to save them. You don't have to keep them. You can just throw them out. Tashmishe Kedusha, which is category B, those are Nignazim. Those have to go into Geniza. Those have to go into Sheamus. They have to be buried. You're not allowed to dispose of them in a regular manner that you would dispose of other items in your house. So what is in list A and what is in list B? Says the Gemara as follows. Ve'elu hein Tashmishe Mitzvah. So what is in category A that after you're finished using them, you're allowed to dispose of it? Says the Gemara, Sukkah, Lulav, Shofar, and Tzitzis. What's the common denominator between Sukkah, Shofar, Lulav, Tzitzis? So you could say they're all mitzvahs d'araisa. But why should that make a difference?
They're all very specific to a particular day.
They're specific to a particular day. Okay, maybe. What? You know, Rav Asher Weiss once told me something which I thought was interesting. We were discussing something in Halacha, and so he said, so what do you think? So I said, maybe it could be mechalik like this. Maybe you can separate the discussion by saying this represents that and this represents something else. So he says, yes, it's a chiluk she'enu mechalik. It's a distinction without a difference. It's true. We can always find distinctions between different things, but there has to be a reasonable difference between the distinction that we find. So it's true. We're going to have to come up with a chiluk hamachalik. We have to come up with a difference that's not just a distinctive qualification about each part of the list, but it's something that has to actually explain to us why this should be in list A and this should be in list B. So you're correct. There is maybe some kind of characteristic that's different, but let's try to define what that difference is. So list A that we say is allowed to be nizrakin, is allowed to be disposed of, is sukkah, lulav, shofar, and tzitzis. What is in list B? Tashmishe kedusha. Deluskime svarim, or if you have tefillin, an old pair of tefillin, if you have an old mezuzah, if you have the mantle of a sefer Torah, or a nartik shel tefillin v'ritzuehem, if you have the ritzuas of tefillin, or if you have the nartik, if you have the bag that houses the tefillin, or the mantle for the sefer Torah, anything like that needs to go into the Sheamus. So what's the difference? How do you explain the difference between list A and list B? And what about a Sefer Torah?
It's still a Kedusha. Oh, I guess that's
right.
It's a
Shem Hashem still exists.
So what? So good. What if I have? So what if I have a Parsha in the Sefer Torah? What if I have like a whole column of a Sefer Torah, not one Shem Hashem in there, and it's, you know, part of it gets wet, and now you can't read it. So would I have to put that in a Shemus or not? The answer is yes. But why? What's the reason? So that's what was said before. The problem is tzitzis. Tzitzis is in the first list.
But it's Tashmishe Kedusha.
Right.
Tzitzis was part of the original Kedusha of
Tzitzis. So the way to explain it is as follows. My father, what?
Tzitzis isn't in life.
Yeah.
It's
also very defined? So you're saying it's also very defined in its time. Right, so that's true. That is a distinction. But why would that actually play a role in this discussion? So that's the question that we need to figure out. What is the difference between both of these lists, both of these categories, that one of them we say is allowed to be disposed of entirely, and the other one we say you have to treat with respect even after the mitzvah is over, even after I have no use for it anymore, even after it's an outdated cover to a Sefer Torah, no one's going to use it anymore. Why do I still have to bury that? Why does it have to be treated with respect? How do you understand the difference between both of these categories? So my father writes in one of his svarim from Rav Soloveitchik, who said in the name of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Rav Chaim Volozhiner in the fourth shar in the Nefesh HaChaim explains as follows. And he says, the foundation and the source of Kol Inyanei Kedusha, what is the source of everything holy in the world? So the answer is what? Hashem. So what does it mean? Right, so how does that translate from Hashem to the item in front of me? So the answer, he says, is Yisod Kol Inyanei HaKedusha Kedushas HaTorah. The source for everything holy in the world is the Torah itself. The Torah is what gives sanctity, is what gives holiness to any item. Without Torah, it's nothing. Without Torah, it has no inherent Kedusha. And therefore, he says, that is the reason why list B, even after it no longer has any purpose, I'm not going to use this pair of tefillin, we're not going to read from this Sefer Torah, this was an old cover of a Sefer Torah, this was a cover for the tefillin, whatever it may be, since that had a direct connection, a direct contact to Divrei Torah, therefore it has an inherent Kedusha that was infused to it from the Divrei Torah itself. So a Sefer Torah is Divrei Torah. A tefillin is Divrei Torah. Mezuzah is Divrei Torah. Even if they're old, even if they get washed out, they still have an intrinsic Kedusha that was given to them by the Divrei Torah itself, and therefore we assume, even after you no longer need them, that is why we say that they still retain their Kedusha. Based on this, what?
Outside of the mezuzah,
no. No. However, the other items have no connection to the Sefer Torah itself. Such as, when you're doing a mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah, while the mitzvah is going on, there's no Divrei Torah connected to it. So while the mitzvah is happening, you're not allowed to disgrace that because that's Bizayin HaMitzvah. I'm not allowed to defile a mitzvah item. But once the mitzvah is over, it loses its entire sanctity. It loses its purpose. It has no relevance anymore. And therefore we say Nizrakin. Now, the Mishnah Berurah does say, when you're throwing those items out, your shofar, or your lulav, or your esrog, or your menorah, or anything like that, the Mishnah Berurah does say you should do it b'derech kavod. Like the way, the example my father always gives in the shir is, don't throw it out with the chicken bones, with the leftover after dinner. It's not right that it should all be the same. So you put it in a separate bag, and then you throw it out. But beyond that, I have no expectation at all, because there is no inherent kedusha to that at all. Based on that, Rav Soloveitchik said a tremendous chiddush. Rav Soloveitchik said, why is it we refer to a Beis HaKnesses as a Makam Kadosh? Why is a Beis HaKnesses a Makam Kadosh? What gives the Beis HaKnesses its level of sanctity? The answer is the Sefer Torah. So if I have a house minion, and people come, and there's no Sefer Torah there, and people come to daven, and they come regularly, consistently, so many people think, well, it has the status of a Beis HaKnesses. But the answer is it doesn't. Why? Because the only inherent value in a Beis HaKnesses is not given by the fact that people come to daven there. It's the fact that it houses a Sefer Torah.
So if you have a Sefer Torah in the house, then it's a Sefer.
Then potentially it can be. Yes, still may not be a good idea, but it's okay. Yes, so this is interesting. So Rav Soloveitchik, in that context, he said, where did he get this idea from? That the source of Kedusha from a Beis HaKnesses is from the fact that there's a Sefer Torah in there. Where does that come from? So the Rambam writes the following. In the beginning of the fourth parak in Ilchas Beis HaBechira, which is all about Binyan Beis HaMikdash. So the Rambam writes the following. B'shah shebanu Shlomo as habayis v'yada shesof alecharev. At the time that Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, he knew that it was going to be destroyed ultimately. Shlomo HaMelech excavated beneath the surface of the ground, and he made sure that there was a space there. What was the space for? That someday they'd be able to be gonez es ha'aron. Someday they'd be able to take the Aron Kodesh by the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, put it underneath the ground, and it would lay there until everybody would come back. Okay. V'yoshio ha'melech tziva v'ganza v'makim shebana Shlomo. Later on in history, way after Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beis HaMikdash, Yoshio HaMelech realizes things are not going well. He tells them to take the Aron, open up the special hiding spot underneath the ground, and put the Aron there in Geniza. Now, explains Rav Soloveitchik, how strange is it? The Rambam is a Sefer Halacha. The Rambam doesn't tell us the history. He never tells us history, especially when it's history that's not really relevant to us. So Shlomo HaMelech once built the Beis HaMikdash. And while he was building it, he said, oh, I have an idea. Maybe it would be a smart idea that I should put a special storage room underneath the Beis HaMikdash in order that when the time comes that it's going to be destroyed, we're going to be able to hide the Aron. Why is that relevant in the Halacha? In the next Beis HaMikdash that we're going to build, Mehera Yibana HaMikdash, We're going to have to build a storage room. It's not going to be destroyed. So why do I have to know that halacha? Why does the Rambam quote this in Hilchos Beis HaBechira? The answer, said Rav Salav Eitchik, is DBMS, Af b'bayisheni hayashama aronim haluchos. The Rambam was bothered with the following problem. What gives every item in the world its level of Kedusha? The fact that there's Divrei Torah connected to it. So in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says there were many things that were missing from the first Beis HaMikdash experience. One of them was the Aron. Now here's the problem, the Rambam says. If there was no Aron in the second Beis HaMikdash, then what Kedusha did the second Beis HaMikdash have? What was the value of the second Beis HaMikdash? Why'd they have it? What was the point? Obviously, it had to be a Makom Kadosh. If it was a Makom Kadosh, then you bring Kavanos, then you do everything else. But if it's not a Makom Kadosh, then what's the point at all? The answer is, Shlomo HaMelech was concerned. And he said, this place always needs to remain a Makom Kadosh. Even when the second Beis HaMikdash, you're not going to have an Aron with Luchos, and you're not going to have that level of sanctity, we're going to make sure that you're going to have it from what was still there from the first Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, Shlomo HaMelech said, it is so intrinsic to a Beis HaMikdash to have Divrei Torah that infuse it with Kedusha. Without that, you have no Kedusha at all. And that is why the Rambam includes this in the Halacha, because the Rambam wanted us to know that this is not just a Halacha that's limited to the story of Shlomo HaMelech. This is much more expansive. This is what gives the Kedusha to every Beis HaKnesses subsequently as well. My father also pointed out, he extended this a little bit further, and he said perhaps this is the reason why we have a chiyuv of kvura, after a Jew passes away, we have a chiyuv to bury that person. Why? Why don't you say, well, his life is up, he's not doing anything anymore, so just let it be. Why am I mechuyuv to show kavod, to show respect, and to bury that person in the proper fashion? The answer is said of Salavechik. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Nida that every child in utero is taught kala tarakula. So the Mefarshim ask, the child is taught kala tarakula, and then before they're born, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes, the Medrash says, and slaps the child on the face, and they forget everything that they know. So then you have to ask yourself, then why do we spend 9 months learning all of this? What was the point? If we're going to forget everything, then why should we learn it in the first place? So you're saying to relearn it. No, that's the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes us forget it. But why did he teach it to us in the first place? The answer is, sort of Soloveitchik, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to infuse every Jewish person with an intrinsic and inherent sense of Kedusha. And by doing so, by infusing all of us with Divrei Torah before we were brought into this world, we are now considered to be people who are holy, people who are kadosh, even without doing anything else. And therefore, even after we're no longer in use, meaning we've now been taken away from the opportunity to live life any longer, don't forget that you are Tashmishei Kedusha. Don't forget that you are part of that list that the Gemara says that even afterward, after it no longer has a specific purpose, it still needs to be treated respectfully, and it needs to be buried. So when it comes to these mitzvah items, we assume, let's say a sukkah, a shofar, a lulav, a Hanukkah menorah, those would not be a problem. The only caveat here is the Shulchan Aruch does write in Hilchos Hanukkah that while it's true that a menorah would be able to be disposed of, he does say the shmanim upsilos, that when you set aside the oils in order that they should burn on Hanukkah, so those, he says, cannot be used for any other purpose even after the mitzvah is over. Why? Because he said those were huktzu l'mitzvaso. Those were set aside for the mitzvah. Once they were set aside for the mitzvah, they are off limits. Like we say, haneris halalu kodeshim. Those take on an elevated status. So that's why you've probably seen that there are pictures floating around of all the Hasidic Rebbes in Eretz Yisrael. They have a big sreifa at the end of Hanukkah where they take all the leftover psilos and shmanim and they burn them. The Mishnah Berurah does say one way around it would be that when I light my menorah and I, let's say, I have a lot more oil than I absolutely need, so I make a tanai. It's implicit that I don't want this to become kadosh. I want the amount that I need for the mitzvah. Anything that's left over after, I want to be able to dispose of. And then it's not considered to be hooked to the mitzvah, so there would be no problem at all to dispose of it. But that would be a tanai that one has to be mindful of at the time of the hadlakas haMenorah, which I assume most people are not. So that's a big discussion in Shulchan Aruch. What about the psilos and the shmanim that are left over after Hanukkah is over? But when we talk about that, that just means the ones that are in the cups that did not finish off. What if I have a bunch of cups of shemen that haven't even been used at all, that I never put into the menorah? So that certainly I can use for any other purpose, because those were never set aside, those were never designated for the mitzvah itself. Yeah, question?
What's the